Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, I have a great guest, a fantastic topic that will really support you on your journey to optimal health and well-being. Before we go there, I just want to welcome anyone who may be listening for the very first time. It's great to have you here. I invite you to go to my website, which is What Women Must Know, also my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because if you miss any of my podcasts, they will be sent to you via email or Facebook, so you'll be able to catch all of the great shows that are coming out each week. And I also have ongoing information, educational stuff, special deals, all sorts of things go on. So if you opt in to either What Women Must Know or like me at my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, you'll be sure to stay in the loop with things. So let me just, first of all, introduce my guest today, because I have a really very special guest who is so kind to give us his time, and that is Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. And Dr. Pelletier is quite a prolific writer, author, lecturer. He's on the frontier of so many things, and he is a clinic. In fact, if I gave you all of his accomplishments, it would take up the entire length of the show, so I'm going to abbreviate things. And what I want to tell you about him is that he is a clinical professor of medicine at USC School of Medicine and former chief professor of medicine at the Stanford School of Medicine. And he has authored numerous books, and that includes Mind is Healer, Mind is Slayer, Holistic Medicine, Healthy People and Unhealthy Places, Sound Mind, Sound Body, The Best Alternative Medicine, Stress-Free for Good, New Medicine, and his latest book, which we're going to talk about, is Change Your Genes, Change Your Life. So it is such a pleasure to have Dr. Pelletier talking to us today about breakthrough science, I call it. It's understanding how we are at a paradigm shift and how people are addressing their health needs, how we uncover key points of information that make personalized medicine the way of the future. So this is a great show. You're going to enjoy it, learn a lot, and you might even want to step in and experience this world for yourself. So first of all, let me welcome Dr. Kenneth Pelletier to the show. Hello, Dr. Pelletier.
Hi, and thank you for your invitation. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I've been very much looking forward to having you on the show. Of course, your reputation precedes you, and it's just nice to have a chance to talk to you in person and for you to share your wisdom and experience with my audience, with myself. You know, you are always on the leading edge, aren't you? You seem to be right there ahead of the curve with so many things. I'm just wondering how you got there.
Well, thank you for the compliment. And in my research at the University of California School of Medicine in San Francisco, the mandate is to stay on the leading edge, to always be looking at what is just over the horizon, be it life extension, integrative medicine, and in this case, it's this major, you summarized it perfectly, this major time of transformation in genetics and what we're learning about the human genome and what we can do about it. So there really is a push, if you will, to always be on the cutting edge. So I'm really surfing a wave.
Well, it's a wonderful wave to surf because it's making such a difference in people's lives to get this knowledge and information. And I was sharing with you before we got on air that I have been fascinated by the subject of what we're talking about, changing your genes, and we'll explain what nutrigenomics is and how it has saved my life. And I shared with you that I I thought I was a really healthy person. I was doing all the right things. And as a naturopathic doctor, I do have access to so much information and, you know, nutritional supports. And, you know, I thought I was doing just great. And then I got some blood work back, and it really shocked me because some major parameters were out of whack, seriously out of whack. And it just couldn't, I couldn't fathom what is going on. I thought I'm doing the right things. And then I was able to get this nutrigenomic test, which we'll talk about, and it showed me these vulnerabilities. It showed me the software glitches that I came into this life with that I didn't know I had, and gave me the keys, the roadmap to make the corrections. And just to cut a long story very short, I had some blood work done after I put into place those corrections, and everything changed and came back into optimal range. So I am forever indebted to this work, and I'm so glad we're talking about it because we need to get the word out to people about what is possible now.
Well, Juan, congratulations for what you did, and thank you for conveying that to us. You've just actually, you have summarized an absolutely perfect example of where every single individual is. We do not know who we are biochemically. We don't know who we are genetically. And when we need to choose a particular food or a particular stress management technique or a pharmacology or an environmental exposure, the question is, who is doing the choosing? And you may feel healthy. In fact, you may have on an ordinary physical exam, an annual physical exam, if you believe in those, you have a perfectly normal physical exam. Well, that simply means you're in the normal range of a terribly abnormal population. All of our standards whereby we judge health are really abnormal. So what we're looking at is how do you go below that and look at your individual genetics, your individual blood chemistry, and your biome, your intestinal tract. And when you have those three variables, then you have a really complete picture. So the question of, do I have a high-fat or low-fat diet, ketogenic or fasting? Do I use one of 100 different forms of stress management technique or another? Do I take X amount of a pharmacy drug or not? Are answered for you. It's really a pairing of your biochemical profile, which is as individual as your fingerprint, with exactly what you need to stay healthy and long-lived in your world.
So that's such an intriguing concept that I'm sure people want to know, well, what do we do? So let's start at the beginning and address this whole concept of genes and the role that genes play and what really are the genes that we need to be concerned with.
Right. There is the most common misconception, and that's why I wrote this book, is that our genes are like an encyclopedia that conveys everything about us from our hair color to height, weight, diseases we're susceptible to, how long we will live, etc. That's a misconception because literally 5% or less of what we experience as a human being has to do with what's called monogenic or fully penetrant genes that predetermine these variables. The other 95% of chronic disease is dependent on an interaction between our diet, stress, pharmacology, environment, psychosocial factors, belief systems, and that gene. So the way that I've laid it out is that you think about three things. One is the gene, and it's like a blueprint. It tells you kind of the basic design if you're building a house. Then the blood is like the structure. So you're beginning to build the house, but when you're building the house, you always have to modify it from the blueprint. So the blueprint does not dictate the final house. And the last stage is with the biome or the intestinal tract. It tells you what it's like to live in the house. So after you have a gene, it expresses in the blood affects your organs and your central nervous system, your brain, et cetera. What happens to you metabolically at the end of all that? So we have these three factors in place. We have this, complete picture. Now, the biggest change, the biggest switch, is this area of epigenetics. And epigenetics means above, beyond, or around the gene. So So it's everything that happens to the gene after the moment of birth. And virtually all of the fully penetrant genetic diseases are evident within the first 6 to 9 months of life. After that, virtually all disease, including late onset diseases like late onset type 2 adult diabetes, are really due to environmental factors and everything we do on a lifestyle basis day in and day out to make a gene become expressed or suppressed. So we may have a genetic predisposition to elevated cholesterol, but if we eat a good diet, exercise, use pharmacology when necessary, use supplements, herbals, we do not have to express or allow that gene to become evident and affect our health. That's the main thing, is to be aware of these biomarkers and how to influence them so we achieve an optimal state of health, an optimal state of longevity.
So people, I think, still believe that you inherit a set kind of genes. Your profile is set when you're born, and you know, it's like how the dice was thrown, so to speak. And that's it. And that we even to this day, we talk a lot about genetic diseases and genes affecting diseases and outcomes. But we've moved so far past that concept in our, you know, leading edge work, where we, because that belief leaves us rather helpless. You know, we're victims of the genes that got passed down to us, and that's all we can do. But in actual fact, as you were saying, very few diseases actually are from a mutation in a gene. But what is being recognized and what you're writing about is that there is an aspect of our genes that are directly influenced, I would say, talking to the environment, and the environment is talking back, and can actually be altered, can respond in different ways, more so than we ever knew, and how we have a greater destiny in our hand, which is what you're writing about, is how you can change your life by understanding that you can alter how these genes get expressed and can look at your vulnerabilities and then know how to support them and really find a pathway to optimal health. So can you talk a little bit more about the whole epigenetic world that we are in now?
Yes, the gene itself, my title of the book is deliberately misleading. Genes don't change. Genes are invariant unless they're damaged by radiation or petrochemicals. So genes are fixed. What varies is around the gene itself is a molecular coding known as single nucleotide polymorphisms, mouthful, SNPs for short. So these SNPs are a chemistry that's in interaction with the cells. The cells are in interaction with our bodies and everything about our bodies. These SNPs govern whether that gene is turned on or turned off. And again, the gene doesn't really turn on or off like a light switch. It's like a rheostat. You can turn it up or you can turn it down. And within our, and even if you have a predisposition, let's say if you had both sets of parents were obese, does that mean you're doomed to obesity? No. Does it mean you probably have a genetic predisposition to obesity? Yes. But once you know that, then you know you have to be more careful about your diet. If you had parents, let's say there's alcoholism in your family. If there's alcoholism, yes, you have a strong genetic predisposition to developing alcohol dependency or abuse. But once you know that, you can decide, I need to be very tolerant or very aware of how much alcohol I consume and really moderate that consumption. So these are all to make us aware. They're like little signal devices that say, pay attention. And we know a great deal about how to turn these things on and off, how to moderate these biomarkers. And what you described about your own situation is a perfect example. You saw some markers that you didn't know were elevated or out of a normal range. That is that's the common experience we have with all of our patients, which is they're always surprised to see a biomarker. And some of these are professional athletes. They're special forces within the military, they're senior management executives at major Fortune 500 companies, individuals who are very healthy, high-performing, very productive, and when they get their results back, they're shocked. to see how out of alignment they are with an optimal range. And again, when we get them onto the various recommendations that come out of these assays and retest, let's say as far, probably the most distant testing before you see a change is 10 to 12 weeks. Most of these biomarkers actually change in seconds or hours of a person making a change. So this is a highly malleable, very sensitive system that's constantly in flux. And when you said this kind of bidirectional communication, it's absolutely true. The gene is talking to us, pushing us in a particular direction. We and our actions and our environment are talking back and saying, yes or no, I'll go that direction or no, I won't. And that makes all the difference. And for someone who might not want that responsibility for their health, it's frightening. I didn't know I had that much control. And for other individuals who really like the idea that we do, in effect, regulate our destiny, it's very good news. Last point is James Watson of the Watson and Crick, who discovered the structure of the DNA in 1954. He was the first person to have his complete DNA mapped about 5 or 6 years ago now. And he had a great statement that if he brought his completely mapped human genome to his family doctor, that he or she would know 1 to 3% more about his health and longevity as they would know from just simply doing a good physical. 1 to 3% more, that's virtually nothing. So, you know, we are really in our infancy in understanding the genetic code, but we do know enough to begin to make some major lifestyle changes.
Now, there are some really interesting studies that have been done that really make the point very, very powerfully how the environment impacts how these genes get expressed and whether we're vulnerable to more inflammation or more oxidative stress or are challenged with our detoxification pathways. And you talk about some of them in your book. Can you share some of the things that we now know directly impact how genes in this epigenetic world can be affected, can be altered, can be enhanced or compromised?
Well, in looking at basic, this is textbook biochemistry, one of the basic mechanisms whereby we have a potential for disease is inflammation. Now, inflammation is not all bad. We need inflammation. If you're cut and you have to heal, that's an inflammatory response and it's very positive. When we have global inflammation, we have inflammation of the arteries or the intestinal tract of organs, that's a problem. And that pathway, there are seven basic biochemical pathways in the body, one of them being inflammation. That pathway is governed by a small subset of maybe 7 or 8 genes working in interaction. What we know about that pathway is that it's highly influenced by stress. So when we are under chronic, long-term stress, the body's normal response, and it is a healthy response, is inflammation. So the inflammation serves a role. It serves to make our joints stiff. It serves to increase heart rate. It serves to have the brain be highly oxygenated so we're prepared to fight or flight in combat. Short-term, that's no problem. In the long run, if we stay in a state where the source of stress is not immediate, not identifiable, and not resolvable. And if you think about it, that's kind of more common than a physical threat to our lives. It can be worries about our taxes, a job, or, you know, interpersonal conflict, whatever it is. Our bodies react in exactly the same way as though we are in a physically dangerous environment. So that response produces a long-term inflammation. You have the arthritic disorders, you have the gastrointestinal, functional bowel, irritable bowel, you have headaches, you have vision changes, dry mouth, various responses that, again, are normal in the short run become abnormal over time. So the trick, if you will, in this case with the inflammatory response and being in excess, is knowing what particular response do you have that lets you know you're under excessive stress. So for some people, it's racing thoughts. Other people, it's cold hands. cold hands are a common short-term response. We share that in common with every other animal, that when we're under stress, the blood to the periphery of the body shuts down. So if we bleed or are cut in combat, we don't bleed as much. So we shut down. So cold hands might be your signal. Dry mouth, stiff neck, irritable bowel, whatever it happens to be. But as soon as we identify that and know that we're under excessive stress, that's the time to engage a stress management technique. And there are literally hundreds of ways to do that. And we can break up the inflammatory cycle of a type 2 stress or long-term stress response into manageable short-term type 1 responses, lower the inflammation, feeds back to the genetic mechanism saying, it's okay. You can quiet down now. We don't need to be constantly signaling this pathway that it needs to be inflamed. So that's the loop. The gene triggers the inflammation. What we do triggers back to the gene, feeds it information that we're okay now. There's no longer a need to continue that response. And this cycling of information between our behavior, our responses, our diet, our exercise, our environment is the basic mechanism underlying epigenetics.
And it's important to note that often when we think about stress, we think about it, you know, affecting our adrenal glands and creating more, you know, anti-inflammatory responses in the body to long-term stress. But we're talking about its communication to the very gene expressions themselves. The genes themselves are noting what's going on and are giving various signals for better or for worse, that are generating this inflammatory response. And we'll talk about some of the other pathways as well. So the good news is that if we understand this, we can modify our behaviors or our diet or our exercise or lifestyle factors, because how we live our life is directly communicating to genes as well. Can you talk a bit about the role of beliefs and meditation, what we now know about those strategies for actually altering our genes and creating healthier communications?
Yeah, actually, this was a surprise to me. I mean, one of my major research areas has been in the use of meditation for health enhancement and health promotion. And I was actually surprised to see the extent to which meditation and more generally stress management techniques have a profound and direct impact on the genes. There are a number of several studies, one here at UCSF School of Medicine, another at Harvard and other places, in the last few years. For instance, one of the studies has demonstrated if you have individuals who have never meditated and compare them to individuals as a control group just doing relaxation for 10 to 12 weeks, what you find at the end of the 10 to 12 weeks, that the genetic expression for longevity has changed in a positive way among the meditators. Now, the genetic expression for longevity is, basically the telomere. It's an X-shaped chromosome, and the length of the telomere indicates the length of life, and on the end of it is a tip, like a shoelace. And to the extent to which that's intact, it ensures the accurate replication of cells. So the length of the telomere and whether it has an intact cap or not is a primary indicator of length of life. And that was actually Elizabeth Blackburn here at UCSF School of Medicine received the Nobel Prize, I think about 5 years ago, for that discovery. Well, what they found is that at the end of this 12 weeks of meditation with people that had not meditated before, all of their telomeres increased in length, and the ends became more intact. And, if you look at that, you'd say, well, they've actually extended the opportunity for an elongated life expectancy, which turns out to be very accurate. And just the opposite has been found when you see people who are under extreme stress. The telomere shortens, and the ends become frayed. So the likelihood that cells are going to abnormally divide and potentially into cancer cells is greatly enhanced by people who are under stress and not doing something to alleviate it. So this was, to me, quite amazing, that something like a belief system, a stress management technique, a going inward and becoming quiet, would actually have such a direct and profound impact at the cellular level, at the genetic expression level. That to me is quite astounding, even now.
It is astounding, and to have that understanding that by just taking perhaps just 15 minutes a day to quiet the mind and do whatever technique a person wants to do, there are many choices, can directly impact how genes get expressed. That's a profound thought, because that's power, you know? That's really power in your life.
It is. Well, it really does. I think most of us, with the complexity of life, the demands on us, physically, environmentally, socially, politically, everything that's going on, we can feel like victims. We can feel overwhelmed by external circumstances. We may not be able to change those external circumstances. Doesn't keep us from trying. Doesn't mean we shouldn't give it our best. But what we can change is our response to it. That's the essence of any meditative practice, which is you may not be able to control that unfortunate circumstance, but you can, in fact, exert a profound influence over your response. So if all of us now listening to your program heard a loud bang, a noise, like an explosion, if we had a positive association to that, we like the 4th of July and fireworks, we would have a very nice, pleasant, short-term response to that. If we were in combat, if we were coming back from one of our wars and heard a loud explosion, we may have a PTSD episode or an extremely negative fear response to that. So again, it's not the stimulus, it's not the environment, it's how do we respond. And what epigenesis gives us back is the ability to identify our susceptibility to hyper-response or hypo-response. And once we know that, we can practice, we can engage in meditation, dietary changes, exercise, et cetera, that gives back to us the ability to determine our destiny. One of the quotes I used in the book was, Shakespeare, misquote of Shakespeare, the fault lies not in the stars but in ourselves. And the reality is the fault that lies not in our genes but in ourselves is really more what we're coming to conclude now in the really new science.
And that's such a powerful point, that we have much more power to determine our destiny than we ever realized. But everything matters. You have to take responsibility for your thoughts, for what you put into your body, because food is talking to your genes. It's just not about macronutrients. It's whatever lifestyles. It's who you're around, your environment, your people, your community. Everything is talking to your genes. That's exciting, and it's a huge responsibility as well.
It is, and there are no guarantees. I've known a number of individuals over the years. One of the chairmen of my department was a lifelong runner, didn't smoke, happy, good family, good weight. It's just a picture of health. And we're at a conference and we're running on the beach in Hawaii and a group of us, and all of a sudden we thought he stumbled. And when we turned around, he was dead. He died of a sudden coronary. And in the middle, about 10 doctors are on him immediately to try to resuscitate him. The point is that there are no guarantees. So we can do everything right and have things go wrong. So this isn't some kind of a longevity or immortality prescription. But it does say we can hedge our bets. We can take the information we're given, what we know about our own health, about our own well-being, and move it in a positive direction. That's the really good news. So we're really hedging our bets. And you feel the results. If you do these things and you retest using the nutrigenic profiles or other kinds of genetic assay profiles, which already exist, as you know, it's an opportunity to say, okay, I started here. Look where I am 10 or 12 weeks later. Most importantly, you usually feel much better. That's what's going to keep you going, not some numbers on a sheet that tell you your biochemistry, but it's a good marker to say, okay, I'm really getting there. I can see it. It's objective. There's evidence, and I'm making the right decisions, choices. That's an important difference of being able to measure these changes over time for people.
You know, when you talked about your friend who unfortunately, just had this massive heart attack. It reminds me when I was doing some studying with nutrigenomics, and that's the different markers. And one of the markers that we're going to talk about is the role of oxidative stress and how many athletes, because of the extreme exertion they put on themselves, maybe it's the environment they're in. I mean, I don't really understand runners who run in the middle of downtown Manhattan, but, you know, breathing in all of the exhaust fumes. But I have had stories of people who were athletes, did the nutrigenomic test, saw that they've inherited these genomic markers that showed they were inefficient at producing adequate antioxidants and therefore would be vulnerable when they do things that create a lot of free radicals like heavy exercise, and which is why many athletes get, you know, have these serious problems and unexpected events. And by knowing that, many of the athletes started to up their antioxidant supplementation and other strategies, and that was a way they were directly impacting probabilities of their future.
That's a great example, and that's exactly what we have found when we have studied high-level professional athletics in basketball and in football in particular. And we have found what to me was initially, again, rather shocking, a pronounced vitamin D deficiency in virtually every major athlete, especially in indoor sports like basketball. And we started to wonder, why is that? And if you think about it, they're indoors a tremendous amount of time. They're always working out indoors. They play their games indoors. They usually play at night, so they're sleeping in the mornings, not out in the bright light, getting sunshine. So this was quite amazing, and therefore they were very susceptible to colds and flus. And, in fact, they had hyperoxygenation, so you had hyperproduction of free radicals as a result of exerting when there is a vitamin deficiency that helps them to oxygenate their cells properly. And again, when they started taking, in this case, vitamin D supplementation and getting more sunlight exposure, their performances actually increased. Their performances were maximized. So these are, again, these surprises that we may not know about, but once you do, you can begin to make the changes. One other anecdote, which I always found interesting, is that Scott Kelly, who's a NASA astronaut, returned to Earth after 1 year in space, about 7 or 8 months ago. And he has a twin brother who's actually married to Giffords, the representative. And he has an identical brother who's an astronaut. And NASA keeps track before and after spaceflight of genetic markers. And when Scott returned to Earth, he'd been in weightlessness in the International Space Station for a year. When he came back, what they found was that 7% of his epigenetic expression had changed. Now, that may not sound like very much, but the baseline is that less than 1% epigenetic expression separates us from chimpanzees. So this 7% is a huge change in as little as a year in the expression of certain genetic markers in his profile. One of these was the longevity marker that we talked about. So that had actually elongated. So the telomere had become longer, more intact, while he was in weightless orbit, different kind of conditions with food and environment and exercise. Now, some of those have gone back to baseline, but what the latest finding was published about a month or two ago is that a certain percentage, 3 or 4% of these genetic expressions seem fixed. They're permanently changed by this 1 year in an extreme environment. Now, again, that's an extreme example, but it does show you how when we place ourselves in extreme circumstances, be it stressful or high performance, that this is potentially not necessarily damaging, but definitely affects our epigenetic profile.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. I love those stories. How about if we talk about the seven pathways to optimal health that you have in your book, because these seven pathways are really addressing the areas that have been most researched and the genes that have been most likely to be impacted by changes that we make with diet and lifestyle nutritional support.
Right. And there, this, again, these seven pathways are, you know, basic biochemistry. But what we're discovering is the role of genes in regulating these pathways. That was unknown. It was like a car, but we didn't know who the driver was. Well, now we know the driver are the genes, and the genes are influenced by our behaviors. So the seven are, in brief, methylation, which is like the punctuation at the end of a sentence. So when a gene is replicating, it has X number of letters, and then a methylated a methyl molecule is in place, and that's the end of that sentence. And that changes, and when gene editing technologies that we hear about is dependent on the proper placement of the cut and the cutting and splicing of the gene through the process of methylation. The other is inflammation, which we've talked about. Oxidative stress, which again, what we've talked about, is there is certainly a role, if you will, for oxidation. That's how our cells live and thrive and replicate and how we as human beings survive. But they can be a state of hyperoxygenation, where you get excessive free radical production due to stress, due to excessive physical strain, combat, those kinds of conditions. And we need to be able to purge those excessive free radical molecules from our bodies. The fourth is detoxification. And detoxification is quite literally that. There are foods, fruit juices, periodic fasting that helps the body and the liver to detoxify. If elements in our food and the air and our environment have a high level of toxicity. I think for women, this is particularly important in terms of endocrine disruptive hormones that are present in the environment and need to be detoxified. So that's a basic process that the body is undergoing all the time. It's governed by our genes, but our genes can be influenced to slow down that process, which is not good, or to speed it up into a more healthy range. The fifth is immunity. And immunity is simply how the body differentiates itself from who we are, from every other person or the environment. So our immunity is as distinctive as our fingerprint. And we know that stress and diet and physical activity and environmental noise in particular has a very negative impact on immunity. It suppresses immunity. Now, we don't need hyperimmunity. Hyperimmunity or all kinds of autoimmune diseases. So it's not a matter of increasing our immunity. It's simply stabilizing it within a range when it's pushed by other circumstances in our environment to go lower than optimal and give cells a chance to subdivide abnormally, make susceptible to flus and colds and other kinds of conditions. The sixth is lipid metabolism. And where that becomes manifest is we hear about high-fat diets, low-fat diets. Well, the reality is that there are people who can eat an immense quantity of saturated fat. They have a genetic predisposition to high-fat metabolism. So for them to go on a low-fat diet makes no sense. In fact, it may be unhealthy for them. For most of us, that's not the case, but it's good to know that. So it may not be necessary to go on a restricted low-fat diet if you have a genetic predisposition to high-fat metabolism. The last is mineral metabolism. So it's all of the nutrients and trace elements that are in whole foods, organic whole foods. So to the extent to which we can digest, metabolize, and incorporate those into our general health, it's all well and good. But we also have genes that will actually deplete or negate or block the absorption of certain minerals from our metabolic chain. Again, we need to know about that because we may need supplementation in order to normalize that chain. So those are the seven biochemical pathways that are looked at in these genetic assays and are really critical to knowing who we are and to maintaining our health.
Because it's those pathways that have the most direct impact on how our biochemistry is responding, basically. That, you know, things like oxidative stress and immunity, methylation, they're critical for optimizing functioning. And if we have some glitches in them, then we can't perform, or our body cannot function optimally. And I just want to share an example from what I have learned. I find it really fascinating when I look at the part of my genomic test that addresses detoxification, and particularly the liver, how the liver is functioning, because what is in that panel are some genes that indicate how efficient the liver is in being able to detoxify, and particularly yeah. detoxify estrogenic-like molecules that are found either in our own hormone production or the estrogens that come from the environment. And if we've inherited a glitch, I like to use that word, people can relate to it. If yeah. we've inherited a glitch, then we may be impaired in the ability to properly detoxify and deactivate these estrogen-like molecules. And if we do have this predisposition, we are at higher risk of making molecules, estrogenic molecules that are very powerful, are very, I like to call them, you know, really, they're rogue molecules that can increase the risk of damaging DNA of estrogens in estrogen-sensitive tissues. Have you found that, Dr. Pelletier? Do you see that?
Yes. You've described the mechanism perfectly, and that's what I meant by the estrogenic environment that I think is particularly important for women who are much more sensitive to the free estrogens that are found in basically bred animals, so dairy cattle, chickens. I'm not necessarily an advocate for a vegetarian diet, although I think you know, the best diet is a Mediterranean diet, but certainly if you're going to be eating red meats or chicken, you need to be aware of the fact that estrogens and steroids are used in normal raising, if you will, of animals for consumption. So to have it be organic, then you begin to avoid this excessive exposure. And again, going back with women, this third part of the, you have the genetics in the blood, and then you have the intestinal tract, again, for women is critical because between our mouth and our anus, there are more cells than in the entire human body. So there are more than a trillion cells between the mouth and the anus in a human being, more than all the cells in the human body. And for women, if you include the reproductive organs, there are many millions of cells more. So here's an entire system that we're beginning to understand. And within the next year, it's not quite as well developed as the other two, we will have a set of biomarkers that will really give us this end product analysis. We'll really see exactly what you're describing. How well has the liver been detoxifying, and what is the result of that? To me, that's kind of the third leg of the stool, and we're not quite there yet, but it's an entirely fascinating area of detoxification. And how do you remain healthy in essentially what is a potentially very toxic environment?
And I'm going to just stay on this point a little bit longer, because it's not only the importance of eating clean food and obviously creating as clean an environment as possible, but because I work with women, what I am doing my best is support women in optimizing their health. And in looking at this genomic panel, it also made me realize that when women are taking hormones, we're talking about HRT, bioidentical hormones, even the pill. These are hormones, and estrogen is a key part of these hormones that have to be metabolized. And if we have inherited a glitch that makes it less than optimal in our ability to properly deactivate them and not turn them into this rogue molecule, without understanding that vulnerability and without understanding the strategies necessary to optimize that detoxification pathway, women could be at higher risk of breast cancer or any estrogen-sensitive cancer, uterine cancer, but so can men, because estrogen is also a factor that is involved with prostate health. And if I can just throw this in, one of the things that is critical for people to be taking in their diet, because I have found, I would say, in my small sample of maybe 300 people, I would say more than 95%, I think it's more like 97 or 98% have this inherited glitch to a greater or lesser extent. So it's I could say, if I can generalize it, right, in my small sample, that everyone should be taking a lot of cruciferous vegetables in their diet because they make a molecule called sulforaphane, which helps in this correction of the detoxification pathway, or taking a broccoli seed extract product, which also is able to make this molecule sulforaphane, which has a major plays a major role in proper detoxification. So it's like protection. If you're going to be in this environment, or if you're going to be taking hormones, and it also made me aware that our liver, the function of the liver and the genomic expression of the liver, which hasn't changed a whole lot in hundreds of years, is now met with an environment that has changed a whole lot. So we have a mismatch here, you know. So we need to support that process as best we can. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I agree with your analysis, and I agree with your recommendations. And although estrogen toxicity is most acute for women, it does affect, as you pointed out, the prostate in men, and men do develop breast cancer. They develop it, obviously, at a lower rate than in the mammaries of women, but men are susceptible to this estrogen-rich environment and the lack of detoxification. So the liver and the detoxification of the liver using supplements like milk thistle is really an essential part of the detoxification pathway. The liver needs help with the amount of foods and medications that we take and the amount of environmental exposure. Our livers generally are overtaxed, and we have non-fatty liver disease, which is a result of overtaxing this very, very effective detoxification organ in the body by forcing it to do too much without respite. And so we need to give it a break, basically give it a boost.
You know, the only reason I kind of elaborate on that point, Dr. Pelletier, is because I didn't know that I had that vulnerability. And as a result, I started taking broccoli seed extract. I started doing more cruciferous vegetables in my diet. And that's the point of what we're saying here, isn't it? It's like if you have a roadmap that can tell you, you know, you've got some, bumpy roads here, and there's a switch back here, you better be careful, and, you know, slow down here, or you can, get some petrol here. You know, if we knew that, then we can navigate our life more knowledgeably. And I feel like by doing that for myself, having that awareness through seeing visually on that readout, that this is something that is a vulnerability that I didn't have a clue was a vulnerability, I am more empowered because now I have some strategies that I can use that can directly impact these issues. And that, to me, is the gift of doing this kind of testing. You actually can get that roadmap that can more efficiently tell you how to navigate, because otherwise you are guessing.
I would agree, and I really like that analogy of a roadmap, and it is finding an inner pathway. And, again, if you don't know your own predisposition, if you don't know what your genes are telling your body, you can't make these decisions because you simply are giving either misinformation or no information. But as soon as you have that, and again, the steps, the dietary steps, stress management, pharmacology, environmental, they're all quite clear once you know, and you can turn left, turn right. And I sail a great deal, and one thing you learn when you're sailing is that it's small adjustments in the wheel or the tiller that keeps the boat going in the best direction with greatest efficiency. And it's the same way with our mind-body system and our health. These minor changes and tweaks over time, these changes and adjustments in direction by knowing our own biochemistry is really what we're talking about. And it's not a narcissistic kind of self-indulgence. That's really not the point at all. It's so that you get to live a healthy life, to graduate from school, it would be good to your kids to travel and have the career you want. It's the means to achieve a healthy life. It's not a fixation on trying to achieve some optimal state of health as an end in and of itself. That state for me is the means whereby we live a full life.
Yeah, so well put. So I have one last question which seems to come up a lot for people, and I'll ask you your thoughts on that. And that has to do with the BRCA gene. You know, we're here in I like to call it Breast Health Awareness Month, and that seems to be a big question mark that women especially have as to, you know, what does that mean, and is that an inevitability, and what do we do with it? What are your thoughts about that?
It's a very complex subject, and I actually, in my book, cite Angelina Jolie, who had a very high, I think about an 80% likelihood of susceptibility to breast cancer given her BRCA gene profile, and elected to have a double mastectomy. And that was touted as, you know, a major significant step. That is a solution, but it's not the only solution. And the difficulty there is that most women do not have the, I think it was $250,000 or more dollars for reconstructive surgery following the double mastectomy. That's the part of the story that was not subsequently reported. So if a woman has a high BRCA reading, let's say it's 80%. Well, it does mean that 20% with the same reading will not, in fact, develop breast cancer. So the question is, how do you move, how do you make sure you're in that 20%? There are certain dietary things, certainly the cruciferous vegetables and other kinds of, anti-carcinogenic diets that can be used. You can do more frequent screening, and there are non-radiation-based thermography screening which can be undertaken. There are certain chemoprophylaxis pharmaceuticals which can reduce the likelihood of developing a breast cancer, even if you have a high BRCA reading. So, and worst case scenario, if you have early detection, and you know this, breast cancer is very treatable if it is detected early. So if you remain vigilant, even though you may have a high BRCA score or predisposition to breast cancer, if you remain vigilant, catch it early, there may be the necessity of a surgical intervention. That is a way to resolve that state. The worst thing is to believe that a finding of any single genetic test, even if it's as predictive as BRCA, is a doomsday, a pointing of the finger, saying you will get this disease, because that's simply not accurate. If you have that reading, there are things that you can do, and it restores a sense of control rather than fear. And that's really what we're talking about, restoring hope, giving people a sense they can do something about this, and if all else fails, there are all the other options still available to you.
So that is a really important point I want to drive home to everyone listening, especially those concerned about breast cancer, is this BRCA gene, which actually really isn't even the real name of that gene. Do you remember the real name of the – they just called it breast cancer.
I don't, it's abbreviated BRCA1.
But it's like tumor necrosis factor, or I mean it's some other some other SNP. But the point is that this is only a probability. And, it breaks my heart, Dr. Pelletier, when I hear women are on television, there are these stories going on, and women, you know, get this gene and they go, you know, opt for the – perfectly healthy women opt for the double mastectomy or, God forbid, the oophorectomy, right? They are not being told that make the changes, you know, make your lifestyle changes, make the dietary changes, put the proper nutritional support, get the healthy screening. This is not an inevitability. This is a probability, and this is where what we've been talking about, genomic testing, is a piece of that, because it gives you resources and more understanding about what's going on in your own body so you can make the proper choices and get empowered.
You just said something very critical. On any medical test, any genetic testing, we have to remember these are statistical. They're probabilities. You get percentages and probabilities. These are not certainties. simply not certainties, except when you have the fully penetrant monogenic diseases, which are predisposed and develop early in life. Late life diseases are chronic, and therefore the conditions that have led to them are malleable. And so when you have a strong predisposition, it means there is a probability. There's a 20 to 30%, sometimes higher, that you will have this same profile as another individual and not develop that disease. That's a very important message because it's one of hope, and it allows people to try to take charge and make a difference. It's not always successful, but if it's not, we have all the purely conventional medical backup if our own initial efforts fail. But that I think these initial efforts that people make with irritable bowel, with cancer, with heart disease are what is critical. It restores a person's sense of control over their own destiny.
And I felt very empowered when I did my nutrigenomic test. I felt that I knew steps that I needed to take to do the best I could do to ensure my health and well-being. And
yep.
That's really what we're talking about, is really being
absolutely
empowered.
You know? Yep, very good response on your part. That's ideally that's an ideal response to knowing this information, not fear. It's one of, I can now take steps to be sure I stay in the healthy and longevity end of that continuum.
Exactly. So, well, I'd like everyone to pick up a copy of Dr. Pelletier's latest book, Change Your Genes, Change Your Life. You can also go to Dr. Pelletier's website, which is drpelletier.com, to learn more. You know, I also, since we're on this topic, I will say that I'd like to make a special offer to everyone listening. So what I'm willing to do to support everyone is to offer the nutrigenomic testing that I do at 50% off. So this is a program because it includes a 90-minute consultation, plus we're looking at about 60 of these genomic SNPs, as they're called. So I'll put some information down. People who get this podcast through my Facebook or from my website. But if you are listening and want to know more, just go to whatwomenmustknow.com and contact me. And I am making that special offer to all my listeners to support all of you to stay healthy and be healthy. And I really want to thank Dr. Pelletier for being with us today. I know he's got a really busy schedule, heading off to London later on today. So it's just been such a pleasure to meet you, and such a pleasure to be partaking of your wisdom, Dr. Pelletier. So I just want to let you know how much we appreciate having you on the show today.
Well, let me reciprocate. I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
You're so very welcome. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me again today. Again, we've been listening to Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, and we're talking about your genes, Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, his latest book. And I always want to remind you to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Until next time, have a great week. Bye for now.